Cheers.
Episode 2, and it's an after dark episode.
We like to give ourselves a challenge right off the bat.
You wouldn't think that talking about sex would be like something I actively have to put a lot of energy and mental space into, but between our notes and how we've recorded this episode and rereading the book, there's a lot of investment, like far more than some of my one night stands have had to just record this episode tonight.
Yeah, you know, I feel like I've studied for a midterm exam. I do.
Let's check in with each other and then let's get into Queen Takes Rose by Katie Robert. Yeah. How's life? What are you up to? Anything you want to share? I saw that you made a new declaration recently on social media about you coming back bigger and better and with your writing, which I am super stoked for. Not to put pressure on you, but like if there is a Caitlin fan club, I think my wife is the only person I compete the hardest with to be like at the front row. So.
Oh, you guys are so sweet. Yeah, you know, I'm working on some writing projects that I am trying to get out like ASAP. But right now, Mercury retrograde is kicking my ass, quite literally, because I fell down some stairs and now my butt is bruised purple. So it's very cute.
When I said we should get into the characters' mindsets, I didn't mean for you to actually mimic the bruises of body parts and derrieres.
I feel like if I was in one of these books, whoever was giving me bruises would probably have been a little bit more gentle. So,
because you wanted it more gentle, or because you haven't had somebody who would be more rough?
There's nothing rougher than some cement stairs. Let's just say that.
Oh, I follow. You meant versus the staircase. I went somewhere else. Pardon me. I'm caught up. We're on the same page. Welcome to After Dark, ladies and gentlemen. She's and they's. So if you haven't heard me mention it yet, this is an After Dark episode. Our plan is not to hold back and to talk about erotica versus romance forward things. A quick catch up with me is there's nothing to catch up about. Yay, making friends as an adult is awkward. But yeah, that's all that's going on. I'm just living in a new town and figuring out how to function in a current COVID world in adult friendships. So there we go. With that said, let's jump into the book. Yeah.
Yeah. Before we like delve into plot, I do think it's important for us to set the scene for our readers and talk about how this book, this author, how we connected about this, how this came into our lives.
Yeah, my introduction to Katie Robert and the month's mortgage I've probably paid to her was one influencer mentioned it on her social media. A good friend who saw it on that social media mentioned it to me, read the books, and was like, oh goodness, you need to read these books. I read the first few. I will let you tell your story because it's more amusing. And now we're in a deep, deep, deep rabbit hole of Katie Robert entrenchment. Like, I don't, fandom, yes, but it's more, it's really like we dissect these books with each other through telecommunications and this whole household reads them. So how did you come into action with these books?
LOL. So listeners, Rebecca and I share a reading device because it's just easier when we're reading things for this podcast to share notes. But Rebecca reads a lot faster than me. So oftentimes I will open our app and Rebecca has downloaded like 5 new books in the span that it takes me to read half of one. And it means that I never run out of reading material, but I often find like pleasant surprises. So I was on a road trip and I needed something just to like get me reading. And I opened a series, the Wicked Villains series by Katie Robert. And I wanted to not like it for reasons I will get into later, but I really was like, I don't know. Let me read the first chapter of this first book and see how it goes. After I had read maybe 3 books in 2 days, I texted you and was like, what is wrong? Like, why can't I stop reading? Like, what is wrong with me? And you immediately responded. You're like, oh my God, Ruth's reading them all. she's obsessed. I'm reading them all. I'm obsessed. Like, here are the other people in my life who have either told me to read these books or I've, like, we're all obsessed. So it was just like a long weekend of all of the people that I talk lesfic or like erotica, like any of these subjects with. We were all reading these same books and we've been obsessed ever since. Like, I don't think there's been a week that's gone by that I haven't read a Katie Robert book. Since this summer.
I mean, we're reading plenty of other stuff around them, not to say that we need to, but it's definitely one of those things of like, what have you read? Okay, let's talk about, you know, the inherent literature traits of these novels or the tropes within these and the breakdown and the evolution of technology in these books. And then it's, can we break down if we find this hot or not? Or can we discuss like why we feel guilty for liking this? Or can we unpack, in this case, which I'm going to prod you a little bit more about, how I am not a Disney fan and I am desperately into these Disney books, speaking for Caitlin. But obviously you've also seen the movies because you understood many of the references, which are, you know, copyright and trademark are a thing. So it's very intelligent how it's woven in.
Yeah. So like to set the scene or to give you some background on the Wicked Villains series, it's a series of erotica stories that is, they're all centered around the villains from the quintessential like Disney Renaissance movies. So the first book is Jafar and Jasmine. We get Gaston and the Beast from Beauty and the Beast. We get Ursula
and Belle. And it says Ariel. A lot that in that MFF book, you forgot the female identified character.
Yeah. I mean, and we have Hook, Captain Hook, and Tinkerbell. You do have Peter who comes in as a villain. And who am I forgetting?
The Ariel, Eric/Alaric character in the Sea Witch. And then you have the book we're discussing, which is the last in the series.
Yeah.
Which is Aurora. Yeah. Queen Takes Rose, which is Aurora and Maleficent, basically. And Maleficent is a leader, political badass of Amazonian heritage.
Goes by the name Malone. And I'm not a Disney person. I really don't. I don't care about or for Disney. You know, I watched all those movies growing up and enjoyed them, but I'm definitely not somebody who is excited to like listen to the Hercules soundtrack. Hercules and Meg and Hades are another one of the books that I forgot to mention.
I've got to ask you a question. Like this isn't tracking for me. You make this comment about about Hercules, the music on Hercules. I will fight about this. It is amazing. But also, you were a person attracted to many of the musicals in the Cameron Mackintosh post. Most of these musicals were written by those people, or at least people they collaborated with. So you to say that you don't want to listen to the music, like, I'm sorry, if you can't listen to this and then like jam to Tarzan, and I get that's Phil Collins.
Okay, well, I think we've established at a few different points of our lives that you and I feel very differently about Tarzan. I hate that movie.
My wife's coming out song is Strangers Like Me. I mean, it has a place in my home. Tell me something that beats Tarzan's music.
The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Okay, I immediately stand corrected. You are right.
Okay, well, let me rephrase. Let me redirect, because you are right. The music of these movies is really good. And who am I to say that it's not? It's all banging. However, I'm not the type of person who like takes BuzzFeed quizzes to decide which Disney villain or princess I am. I don't like engage with the characters in the sort of cult of Disney fandom that I feel like a lot of people, like millennials, people of a certain age, have these big soft spots for like the Disney Renaissance films that I just don't I don't have in my adult life. Doesn't mean I won't enjoy them.
I think it is safe to say, without running anybody who gives us their time to listen to this podcast away, right. You and I do not belong to the group that would call themselves Disney adults.
Right.
I will say, as a person who is older than you by a few years, the Disney Renaissance was like the quintessential experience of my actual childhood. Every year, those movies dropping and going to see them. Also, as a child, I thought I wanted Belle to be my big sister because I'm like, she likes to read books. She's kind of, pardon the pun, quirky. Those who know will get it. And I was like, yeah, and I guess the Beast is fine. And like, you can unpack that whatever way you want. And then adult me, who dealt with her sexuality, is like, oh, no, very passive crush on Belle. Okay. But, you know, like 8-year-old me didn't get that. So,
yeah, you know. I mean, up until I was 3.5 years old, actually, up until I was 5 years old, if an adult was like, oh, what do you want to be when you grow up? I told people I wanted to be Cinderella when I grew up. I don't know what that means. But I had a love.
The beginning of the movie or the end of the movie?
I don't know. The Disney film?
Or, I mean, Caitlin, we both have film. German roots. Was it the scary story?
No, the Disney film. So I think you're right. Like, neither of us are Disney adults. And so when I read the synopsis for this series, I really didn't think that I was going to like it. But I was hooked right from the first sex scene, which for Katie Robert happens on like page 17 of all of her novels. Like, this is no chapter 13 kind of stuff. And I was hooked. I can't stop reading.
All right, Tink. I'm going to call you Tink the rest of the night since you were so hooked. It really is. I am hoping that people choose to read the synopsis when we say we're reading a book before they engage, because like, Katie Robert's really amazing about content warnings and kind of letting you know what's going on and always telling you when there's swords crossing, which is something that is a fan favorite of yours, I've learned. But I think, you know, anytime we get to an After Dark episode, there is a part of me that's been through enough trainings in my life and enough like inclusivity language practices that, you know, erotica can very much bring out things that people are insecure about or feel unsafe with. And I never want to promote that. And in these novels, consent is always forward, but you sometimes don't learn that it was consent forward until we get the next, they rotate back and forth between perspectives.
Yeah.
And it is always consent forward. But if it feels like a non-con scene, it's just because that is the play happening. And the first person telling us the story is engaging in the like, I already understand this to be true. And then we get the second chapter with the person responding back with, I'm so glad we agreed to this before we engaged.
Yeah. So. I want to add, for people who are listening to this and considering reading these books, you should read everything that Katie Robert writes, right? Like off the bat, you should. But this series, this novel that we're going to delve into is dealing with kink and dealing with aspects of dom and sub play that we haven't really talked about before. So if you have feelings about that, or if that's not something that you enjoy, just know that that's really part and parcel with the story of these books.
Also, if you're not in a place to hear about a parental death or an accident happening to a family member, there's no way to talk around that fully.
Yeah.
So we're really glad you were here. We'll see you next week. Thank you for your time thus far. Please take care of yourself. I hope there's some warm tea waiting for you. You know, two good things. For those of you still here, Caitlin, are you comfortable explaining, trying to get us through the basic premise of the opening of this book?
Ooh.
Because it is book 6. So like a lot has happened before we get here.
Yeah. So here's what we'll do. I will tell you like the basic premise of the book. And then I think after that, we need to circle back around and talk about the world that is built by Robert in the 6 books before this, because there's some stuff that you just kind of will need to know in order for the rest to make sense. But we open with this world's favorite sub, Aurora, She works at the Underworld, which is a nightclub that we'll talk a whole lot about here in just a few minutes. And she's been a recurring character in the six books previous to this, but we open up with her very somber and very sad. She's at the hospital with her mother, who has been in a coma or kind of in a vegetative state for several years, and she's made the decision to let her pass on from this world to whatever's waiting for us after this. And we learn that there's a lot of blame with the state of her mother. There's a lot of backstory and history, and Aurora has been working and living at the Underworld to pay for her mother's medical care and medical needs. And she's been doing that since she was really young.
Yeah, and that sounds super serious, again, because we're in book six, so we're going to get to the fun stuff. But that leads us to Malone, who, again, is the Maleficent-esque character. And she has approached Hades, think Hades from Hercules, to... My language here is going to fail. It's not indentured servitude, but close, but also consensual bartership of time. Basically, Malone has asked to have Aurora live with her and engage in consensual sexual favor for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
To complicate matters due to what's happening in the beginning, which is important to the rest of the narrative, Aurora has a lot of animosity towards Malone because part of the reason her mother was in such a state was due to Malone. So this is... Enemies to fuck buddies to lovers. I don't like what tropes are here if we were unpacking this?
Well, so I mean, I think enemies to fucking to lovers is a good descriptor, because Malone doesn't want this time with Aurora just because she loves, you know, because she likes her. She wants to break her. She can feel every time she comes into the club and she's engaging with other people there, she feels like she's under Aurora's spell, and she wants Aurora to submit to her and to fulfill her sexual fantasies in order to sort of like get that out of her system. And Aurora wants to kill her. And
yeah, she so wants to break herself of Aurora's spell.
Yeah.
And also, as time goes on, to break Aurora of the emotion that she refuses to let herself feel.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have the trope of like what's the best way to describe it? Like, you only have a little bit of time. Like, the clock is ticking, and you mm-hmm. have this relationship that is happening with this deadline. You have like an ice queen who's slowly melted and revealing herself to like a more sunshiny character.
We have the sunshine character who becomes like Grumpy Bear.
Yeah.
But not.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, and then really for the first time, and it's an easy joke to make. I know that this is cheap. I apologize now. We have a sincere Disney princess in Aurora because she is a powerful power bottom, basically, and a total brat. What I mean by princess in that is this negative connotation of the pillow princess completely blown up, as it should be. And we have this powerful, powerful, powerful brat character in Aurora. And I could describe things, but how would you describe Malone as a character within the erotic field? Like, if she was a trope, what is her thing?
I think, like, the ice queen who's, like, hardened herself to the world to protect those around her, and the only way she can, like, feel connection to another human being is through sex. I think that's a great way to describe her. And she's classy as hell. She's become
magnificent dominant.
Yeah.
Like, write the perfect character of strength as a stereotype of a dom who is both strength in the real world and dom in the bedroom, which is not the case for everybody. And like, that is what's been created with Malone by Katie Robert. You have this person who very much her restraint and construction can carry between personal and physical. Yeah. And that's insane. Like, it works here because she's so fleshed out and so well written. And in the past books, we see her show this kind of restraint as well. But there, that's the fantasy within this world, is like somebody who can be composed and considerate and compassionate at that level. That's a lot of work.
Yeah.
For anyone.
Yeah. So before we get further into the sex, I do want to talk about the setting. So the action of this entire series revolves around this nightclub, sex club owned by Hades. As you mentioned, the Hades from Hercules-esque person. So he runs what's considered a neutral territory in Carver City. So the other Disney villains or characters based on the Disney villains, they inhabit and rule other territories, but Hades, his nightclub, is considered neutral. So the sex club is not just where all of these desires come out and where people quite literally come together, but it's also like where these leaders come to strike deals and test each other and further the politics of the book. I will say, if you're coming to a book and you don't, like if you're coming to an erotica series and you don't want like to use your brain, I don't know that this is the series for you, because the like sex and the lust and the bodily corporeal interactions with each other is really heightened by what's at stake in the world outside. And that is, it's kind of like mob, like the mob meets Gangs of New York. There's a lot of like threats of violence, threats of starving people. People are trying to get murdered here. Like, there's a lot. There's a lot going on. But that's the backdrop to these characters. So Malone has this position of power within these like very complicated territory struggles. And that's why she's built up such a wall. And Aurora, because she's kind of like a neutral person who's been inhabiting this safe space owned and run by Hades, coming into the book, we are used to thinking of her as kind of a neutral character, but actually she has her own politics and her own background that we have to work through and deal with.
It was fascinating to get to this story because Aurora in previous novels is so often used, I don't want to say used in any context, but she is brought in and introduced to us in order to express somebody else's desire or kink. Like, she's there as the neutral third party. She is a poly-identified person throughout this. We learned through the course of the novel that she can have romantic actions towards people, but she is not a monogamous person, and she is not threatened by people who are, but she definitively is poly. And that is something within this world that is so incredibly well done to explain what polyamory is. I recently heard that polyamory is to relationships what money is to people, meaning that people with a lot of money who start to do really drastic things, it's not the money, it's the energy they had, and now they have the access to it. So for poly people who are able to experience love from many people at once, or interactions from many people at once, as unique individual things where their energy is uniquely given to them, versus people who are engaging because they want to have some extramarital thing and they need permission to do it, Polly will bring that out in you. And Aurora is the perfect example of a character creation of somebody who is able to divide her affection and her interest into the people she's engaging with, and not taking away from a previous relationship to give it to somebody else.
Yeah.
And there are people like that in the world. So it's amazing to see it in writing. Malone is monogamous when she is committed to a single person. I do want to get into a scene, though, eventually between this conversation, about where we hear where that was a misinterpretation with somebody else.
Yeah.
The politics are vital in this. I love them. You know me. You give me like a good, like complicated figure out how to make this work. And I'm 1,000% there. The sex is also hot. I don't think people want us to talk about the politics.
No, so I don't think so.
Go ahead and jump into this first scene to when Aurora agrees to go with Malone to her home and what that looks like. Because off air, you and I have talked about this car ride quite a bit.
Oh, it's hot. These whole first chapters. So Aurora has agreed to go with Malone for 2 weeks. And Malone very quickly starts to place the rules for their engagement together. And she knows that Aurora likes to top from the bottom. She knows she's kind of bratty and likes to take control. And the very first, like, they get into the car, Malone, you know, has a driver, so they don't have to worry about staying safe. Malone turns to Aurora and says, "Take off your panties." Aurora knows she's nothing if not, like, she's here to be a sub, and she does want to submit to Malone, even if she only wants to do it at first to get close enough to her to cause her, like, actual physical harm. But she obeys. She takes off her panties. She's wearing, like, a teddy kind of situation. Like, there's, like, sexy little lacy lingerie. And she's immediately ordered to make herself come in the car. I feel like it's the one time, like, she doesn't get to come after this for a while. That's pretty quickly withheld from her.
And she doesn't even get to do it there. Denial starts early in this relationship.
Very, like, early.
If you are not into reading about orgasm denial, this is not the book for you.
Yeah.
Though I would say you should unpack maybe why that is and then definitively read this book, because it will show you why it can be enticing.
Yes. Yeah. So Aurora kind of says, like, "I actually don't really feel like coming right now. I'm not really in the mood." You know, again, trying to take control of the situation. And pretty immediately, Malone has her, like, on her stomach, over her knee, kind of at her mercy. They're still in this moving vehicle. And there's a lot of teasing. There's a lot of like, starting to withhold her orgasm, starting to withdraw just as soon as Aurora wants something. And then my favorite part of this whole scene is Malone winds Aurora up pretty well. Like, she wants to, even if she hates this other woman, Aurora does want to come. She wants to, like, keep having sex, and she's a little scared by that. But then pretty quickly, the car pulls over. Malone gets out and says, "I'm going to have a drink. Don't touch yourself until I get back. Like, you just have to sit here until I come back." And it's so steamy.
I will not unpack for you why you think that's steamy. We'll leave it at that. But it starts early with this, and it's very much this cat and mouse game. And as it continues, one of the things I find most enticing in this is the ability for Malone to call Aurora out without turning off their play. And there's multiple moments where Malone's like, you weren't being submissive. You were making people feel like they were dominant, which is different than being submissive. And there is this very much this educational factor. And again, like, I know I harp on it, but I love when books introduce kink in a way that's accessible for people who are intrigued while also teaching them healthy ways to engage. And this is a great example, this whole novel. And in the process of, like, discussing Aurora and how Aurora interacts with other clients, we learn a lot about what Malone likes sexually, what she expects from a sub, and also if Aurora's into it or not. Because when hard limits are set at the beginning, Aurora doesn't even set them. We have Hades set them, because Hades is concerned enough that Aurora won't set her hard limits due to her emotions about her hatred for this woman, which should usually be a red flag for me. Like, if you cannot say your hard limits, you do not need to engage. But in this world and in this scene and with these politics, it worked for me and it did not kick me out. It was, I was 100% on board the whole time. What we also get from that is we get a lot of internal things of Malone reacting when Aurora does submit or does engage in a way that she finds enticing, where Malone becomes fragile and vulnerable in a different way. So it is an amazing give or take as a reader to see how the walls break down at the same time in two very different ways. Somebody's gaining power and feels more vulnerable because that's an amount of trust. And the other person is letting go because somebody else is seeing the performance they've always done for other people. It takes a very talented pen to tell the narrative at the same time like that.
God, I love Katie Robert. I love the way she writes.
There's a ton of orgasm denial, as we discussed, but there's also many scenes to compensate for that, where it's basically like climaxing until your body physically collapses in on itself.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's all so hot. It's all...
That cell phone scene with the videos that get shared back and forth is just crazy. And the under the desk oral scene is just... I've read that in other books. I've read that in other lesfic, to be honest, like in trying to be enticing. But in this scene, it feels political the entire time, which again, 100% here for, and made it a completely different level. And the consensualness, of course, elevates it past like the creepiness of what we often hear about when it comes to politics and sex acts in political spaces.
Yeah. So. No, I agree. There's a scene early on that Rebecca is talking about where Malone, within her role as like this important business, like she's running a company basically, you know, she's employing a ton of people. She's like busy in all these meetings. She has Aurora going down on her under the desk while Malone is on the phone or like having a business meeting. And what's powerful for Aurora in that scene is she is starting to see the cracks in Malone's facade. Like Malone is still able to conduct the business meeting, but Aurora can see, you know, how wet she is. She can hear her breath. She can see how tense her legs are. And it's a great, I feel like Katie Robert is so great at breaking down the minuscule things that happen to your body as you're getting wound up and as you're like approaching climax, and the ways that like a really attentive partner gets off on that. And like Aurora does start to get off on seeing that she can kind of break down the barriers with this other woman.
It's fascinating for me, having read all the books too, that when we finally see Aurora really be topped, it's by a queer identified woman, because she's, besides being poly, she's also pan, and she has engagements with various gender identity combinations of sexual partners. And by combinations, I mean sometimes more than one partner at once. That was worded awkwardly, but roll with me. Sorry. Aurora's a woman of color and has this, she always has like decadently bright hair or colored hair. And she makes a comment in the book as a character about how she likes her pink hair the most and how it's also her safety mechanism. Because when, and she, I believe she says men have a certain snarl when they see her hair, she knows that she's not going to scene with them. She's not going to engage because she knows that it's not going to be safe, or they're going to act out something that is one of her limits, because her hair will bring something out in them viscerally. But she doesn't make the same comments about women. And we hear Malone talk about Aurora every time as like Aurora, the entity as a whole, being the drug that she's consumed by, not Aurora, the idea, the image. So by the time these two are like scening individually, because they've seen one other time with other people, Malone would engage in scenes, but engage with women in scenes in a polycule or such, you know, with other people present. But her engagement was with people who use, I would argue, she or them pronouns most of the time.
Yeah.
We kind of see this juxtaposition. One of my favorite little things Malone is known for is her rainbow wall.
Rainbow of strap-ons.
I also think there is a different series. I'm not even going to say it here because Katie Robert writes a lot. We can talk one-on-one, but not everybody needs to know how much I've read. But in another series, there's an allusion to somebody's rainbow wall of things. And I think it was a light crossover between the two narratives. Ooh. But within, we can talk off air, but within this world, we also don't see Malone engage with like the largest at her disposal all the time.
Yeah.
We very much see that when she partners with somebody, the things that she chooses to partner with is what their body can handle or what they want. And yeah. Again, not to like make sex educational and unhot, but I think it's super hot when we figure out like how to deconstruct these ideas of bigger, better, masculine thrusting and instead incorporate, uh-huh. well, is that what you want? There's other uh-huh. options available.
Yeah.
So yeah, there is a scene that I want to talk with you briefly about, because I think when we start to like see the jealousy almost start to unhinge and the, oh crap, something's changed.
Yeah.
Sorry, I went to a Broadway musical. Don't pay any Wicked's in my head. Something has changed within me. We don't need to go there. It's like, what is that, a Disney show? No, it's definitely Wicked. That's where we're at. There is a scene where Malone takes Aurora to a restaurant, the Spindle. There's a lot of like little nods, including safe words throughout the books that are like, oh, yeah. All I'm going to say is the safe word in the first book is Raja, go from there. But they go to this restaurant and the hostess engages with Malone in such a way that Aurora recognizes and like kind of gets her heckles up a little bit about, yeah. And they get taken to this private room in the back. And, you know, that whole scene of sexual engagement and touching each other under a dining room table where anybody can walk in. And she talks to Malone about it. And Malone's like, we had this one night thing. Had I known she was at the restaurant I go to all the time, I'm not sure I would have engaged in that. She knew that's what it was. But apparently the waitress reacts in such a way that the waitress still harbors some missed feelings, some like, hey, I'd do this again for Malone.
Yeah.
And we see Aurora kind of get jealous, and we understand as an audience already that she's falling for her, but she has to start to unpack this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really pivotal scene, because I think it's one of the few times that really forces Aurora, even as being a pan poly person, to think about when somebody's like, yeah, we're cool, that was fun, versus they walk out the room and you think you're on the same page and somebody else may be holding on to something a little bit longer. We as an audience know that Malone has held on to her scene with Aurora for quite some time. But now we're learning that Aurora is starting to see how people hold on to Malone and how she may want to hold on to Malone,
yeah.
Which I think makes that restaurant sex scene that much more heightened and hot for me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I love, too, that restaurant scene forces a conversation between the two of them about, like, Aurora basically comes right out and says, like, I think you're cruel. I think you're kind of like a monster of a human being. And Malone says, like, oh, tell me more about myself. Like, tell me more about who I am. And it's making them not just unpack like who they think the other is as a person, but their sexual politics, like how they've viewed the other sexually as they've engaged in scenes with other people in front of the other. And it's really impactful. It's like so good. I loved it. I loved getting to see the two of them be jealous of each other. Like, I just loved it.
Ugh. And they slowly seem less and less and less to where they physically just get to, like, it is so cardinal in their yeah. acts, which is eventually when like Aurora breaks and cries and mourns this loss in her life, and Malone really comes to terms with, I can be strong for somebody that yeah. I was responsible in breaking. And the sex act becomes a physical manifestation, because we learn that Malone overthrew Aurora's mother. Like, this is complicated and I'm still here for it. So if you read the book, I'd love to know what you think. If you haven't, please read the book. I'm not going to do yeah. this justice, but there is this really heavy laced metaphor that does work for me throughout the book of breaking yourself to rebuild yourself. And in the world of this greater sex positivity place that we are with Carver as an erotica, it physically is breaking through, you know, a sub and a chair and a writing prop and stuff in the bedroom to physically just need to be carried and held and collapse really at the end of yeah. the day under your own weight.
Yeah.
And it's geniusly done. It's so good. Because also Malone gets to break because she wants to be that, and she wants to focus in, and she's willing to focus in on somebody who will continue to have relationships in addition to her own. And she still feels that has power. There's so much power in these two. It's
yeah.
It had to be the last book. It absolutely had to be the last book.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
Is there anything within this text that threw you at all, or that you were more intrigued by, or it's the first time you've come into contact with it? Since this is an After Dark episode, we may as well go for it.
This is like very basic, but so one of the first times that they have sex in this book, they utilize clamps and like the.
And it's triple clamp.
It's a triple clamp. So tit and clit. I've definitely like never engaged with that personally, bodily, but I also just realize that I don't read a lot of stuff that deals with like that level of what is the word I'm looking for?
Like pain kink or like
pain. Yeah. Pain kink and like removing feeling from one part of your body in order to amplify mm-hmm. it for the other. I just don't really see that a lot in the stuff that I read, which was really interesting.
That takes a lot of trust, I think.
Yeah.
Well, and people I think who are very good at like checking circulation and doing those things are few and far between and usually within the community to begin with. And that's something they're known for. There yeah. is a scene in that scene where she talks about, because Aurora's hands are clamped above her head. They're like mm-hmm. a position above her head at one point, not clamped, but you know, restrained.
Yeah.
And she checks in with Aurora after a while and she's like, oh wait, do you have good circulation? Are you okay? And of course, like in a good scene, this would be checked first, but I can't help but think that that was added later in order to introduce that idea to mm-hmm. people who may not know it, or to mm-hmm. show Malone as also getting in the way of her own intelligence when it comes to topping sometimes and being driven by emotion and reaction.
Yeah.
As for the things I will say about the clamps, without getting too personal, I'm not familiar with the triads. I know just nipple play a lot, but like I was surprised that there wasn't as much discussion about post-sensation play.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And when I do encounter this in books, it's usually like the climax immediately happens when you release and all the circulation runs back to one part of the body. There's nothing wrong with that. I just feel that that's a trope within erotica. And I'm like, yeah, I've read that before. There's other ways to do those things.
Yeah.
I don't mean to sound bored. That's not my intention. I just read a lot. And then again, like this world's not unfamiliar to me personally. So I'm like, there's more stuff to it than that. But I'm glad that that was interesting. I think it says a lot that out of all the things they do, sensation play is one of the things that you're like, oh, you know, I don't know if it's because we're reading so much of this or.
Well, and it was one of the things that I had to check myself with, because at first I was like, I don't like this kicks me out as a reader because I don't like this. Like, I don't think that I enjoy reading this. And then I had to really, when I reread it the second time, I was like, no, I'm here for, like, I'm here for it.
Okay. We can cut this, and I'm going to ask you both before and after if we can keep this conversation in.
Mm-hmm.
The mechanism in the dungeon room, the playroom, it's a playroom, mm-hmm. where mm-hmm. she is like basically sitting on a saddle and being mm-hmm. penetrated over and over again until she can't stand it, basically. Did that have a reaction from you in any way different than like stimulation and circulation play?
Yeah.
Because one of those is physically like entering the body and like doing the thing. And the other is, it can be dangerous, but likely not as much so because she's like physically restrained to that thing and forced to fuck it over and over again in that scene.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like at that point of the book, I was so wound up.
I appreciate your
honesty. They were so wound up. Like, we were all so wound up that by the time it was happening, it was like, yes, like, we all need to get off right now. Honestly.
There are moments with Malone. Oh, may I keep that in?
Yes, you can keep that.
Okay. There are moments with Malone where she, like, just harbors on stone sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept waiting to see if that's what that was going to be, because we've seen her in previous books. We have seen her scene. Need to write that out. But there is kind of this duality of, like, Malone not really being touched without it being an act to regain power.
Yeah.
But I don't feel that way reading her story necessarily. But it was intriguing because again, there's nothing wrong with that story, but it's so often a story of like the strong woman is also the untouched woman.
Uh-huh.
So I was glad to see that there was more narrative to it than that. Again, yeah, nothing wrong.
Well, and like, I liked that in this book, she is untouched for so long, but she knows that that's turning, like she's doing that purposefully, withholding herself because she knows that that will make their later play even greater, which was mm-hmm. like so good. I have a side comment that I mm-hmm. love how Katie Robert writes oral sex. I really do because, okay, this is my like, this, I feel like this happens every After Dark episode where I'm like, the rest of every, you know, the rest of the stuff that I read, here's what's wrong with it. And it's not that it's wrong. It's that it's different. We're reading it for different things. But I feel like so often I read female oral sex and it's like very sweet and beautiful and loving and like, but with Katie Robert, her oral sex is still fucking, like it's mm-hmm. it's not sweet, it's still like really penetrative and really like, it's still really sexy, and it's not like a calm down, cool down, like get you off really quickly thing. It's still used to tease and build anticipation just as much as anything else. And I love the way she describes it. I love the way she writes it and uses it. And it's the first time in my life, unrelated to this book, but it's the first time in my life that I enjoy blowjob scenes because I love the way she writes blowjob scenes too.
Again, you should say unrelated to this particular book.
Unrelated to this particular book. I like how she writes all oral sex.
Though I wouldn't put it past her to have a scene with Malone and Aurora and one of Malone's straps, yeah, and that's one of the straps.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, that's an engagement some people do, and that can be like incredibly hot for both parties.
Yeah,
I think too, and I, going off of what you said about the oral sex, one thing I really like in hindsight of thinking about her books is, I'm sure it's there, but I am not recalling right now that narrative of the, oh no, don't, you don't have to, and like women not engaging. Mm-hmm. There isn't that apprehension to like a woman being insecure about her body if somebody else goes down on her in that way. And again, it's not till I don't read it that I realize how often I do read it about, yeah, you know, and it's a very real thing. I'm super freaking guilty of it on every, you know, back forth, upside down and backwards, you know, like it's conditioned in me as a female identified person to apologize for my body. And I've been trying to undo those lessons for a very long time. But in these books, when people take autonomy of their body, they just fucking go for it. And it's, yeah, amazing to read and watch because you need it against the politics of these worlds as well, because you can't believe in anything about gaining power in any of those worlds if they can't trust or gain themselves in the bedroom as well.
Yeah.
There is a series of short stories from the Wicked Villain series. And I will say, the Aurora Malone story is not sexual, and it's one of the most cinnamon roll sweet little narratives.
Really? I haven't read delightful. It yet.
It deals with the two of them discussing if they're starting their family or not and how that looks.
God.
And I don't, after these two and arguably believing it was the best sex of the six, I kind of like that we get this moment of vulnerability at a different mm-hmm. level. It's, mm-hmm. it's pretty swank. So
yeah, I mean, especially because they do get, there are like emotions and vulnerability that come through in this book. Like, but I do think compared to some of the earlier books in this series, there's we don't get that like sweet, tenderness as often as some earlier books in this series.
Ugh. Yeah.
But I do love it.
But it works. And I root for these two.
I root for them. I want them to make a cameo in the Neon Gods series, which I just finally read.
Oh goodness, how'd that go?
Yesterday. I still have so many questions, but it was amazing.
There is a crossover story on her Patreon of the two Hades engaging. Okay. I haven't read it yet.
I need to read that because that would answer a lot of my questions.
Yeah, so it is, just so you know. But okay, like, I do know the Neon God series, which has the next two books announced. And I'm so over the moon for these books. it's being done by a publisher, so they will be according to the schedule that's been developed. Katie Robert produces a lot of her own work, is a very, 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 like, I don't know how she does it, prolific independent writer.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And she recently shared, you know, she's hitting a little bit of burnout, and the publishers, of course, will get their manuscripts in time, but the stuff she's responsible for on her own timeline needs to be pushed back for her own mental health. And I completely get it. Selfish me is like, no, please. I really need the third book in the Sabine series. If you've read the Beast book, you'll understand why. But the other part of me is like, you know, I know how burned out we can feel doing this podcast, and it's not a whole novel. So
yeah, it's only a few hours.
If for any reason Katie Robert or any fan is listening to this, like, if we can coffee you a night's drink and just take care of yourself, of course, we want to read your words. But thank you for the words so far. They really have provided months of entertainment to many of us.
And
when you are ready to write again, I think Caitlin and I volunteer as beta, like, immediately.
Yes, we'll be right in the front of the line.
Yeah, just let us know. I don't know if we want to go much deeper into this. I feel like no pun intended, if we got too into this, it would really start to expose a lot of ourselves. And, you know, these After Dark episodes are always interesting about how much of ourselves we're willing to expose.
Yeah.
So is there anything you want to wrap up on? I do want to say, just as an aside note too, if you need non-binary representation, this is a great book, because Malone's number two is, or number one, basically Malone's best person is Sarah. They use they, them pronouns. They're around. They actually keep Aurora in check quite a bit. They've got some amazing comedic timing in the book. So yeah, there's a lot in this book. Just amazing representation in the series to begin with. But this particular book for lifting up women and those who are gender non-conforming and those who are gender inclusive and bi-gender and everything, this is definitely the book to read. So anyway.
For sure. All right. Well, are you reading anything these days besides Katie Robert?
I am. I'm cautious to say this because I need to write reviews and I guess people will find me. But I have started working as a NetGalley reader. So I currently am doing Count Your Lucky Stars, the third book by Alexandra Belflore. And then I have The Perks of Loving a Wallflower, which is a queer but Bridgerton-esque historical kind of novel. It's something I definitely think you would be into, because we have this weird guilty thing going on right now between the two of us. Mm-hmm. That's the cover, Caitlin.
I like it. I'm into it.
So I think it fulfills a lot of what we've been doing way off air. What have you been to?
Nothing. Katie Robert, I've been playing The Sims. Let me not get into my I'm on my seventh generation of this, like, family that consists basically just of lesbians and their adopted children, and they're all famous actors or farmers. So that's what I've been doing.
I'm waiting for you to tell me you've created the Wicked Villains Village and you have all of them interacting with each other. I expect
Your wife is much better at creating, like, groups like that. I really can only focus on, like, two Sims at a time. No.
Is your Sim individual in adopting, or do you partner your Sims?
No, I partner my Sims, but, you know.
They're always second to the matriarch of the family, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like creator, like Sim. I get it. I hear it.
No. Just sometimes, you know, sometimes someone has to be the farmer and the other has to be the rocket scientist. You know, it's just, and there's different levels of work with that.
Well, my favorite rocket scientist from your platonic farmer. If people wanted to talk to you more about The Sims or these books, or to give you some recommendations on what to read next, where would they find you?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram at Same Sex in the City. You can find me on Twitter at Same Sex the City. You can find this podcast on Instagram at A Tip of the Tongue. or on Twitter at ATTTpod. We love to hear from you guys. I know we've been a little quiet as we're ramping up into this next season, but we are always there and always excited to answer messages. Rebecca, if people wanted to like chat with you or try to get spoilers for all the things you have on NetGallery, how would they reach you?
You can find me fastest on Twitter at Rebecca ATTTpod. That's 3 T's, ATTTpod. I'm also occasionally on Instagram these days at Rebecca Writes a Romance. I think part of me is just avoiding the handle because life got in the way this year, and I'm giving myself permission. Things will come down the pipeline. You will learn stuff. But between a house flooding and a major move, I'm giving myself permission for that timeline to go out the window, and I'll come back to it when, you know, it makes emotional sense to do so. But yeah, it's been glorious to talk to everybody again and to get the podcast back off the ground. Though I find 3 seasons in, it's somehow getting harder instead of easier some weeks. So I'll unpack that a little bit more. I think we're more fleshed out. So when people do talk to us, it's a little bit more personal than it was in the beginning.
I would agree with that. And yeah, I would agree with that. We were so innocent and pure when we started this podcast, and here we are now.
Just weathered and not pure.
Definitely not pure.
Definitely not pure. We'll end there.